This past week, we conducted a trial for five individuals who had only faced a single criminal charge of breach of court order. Those individuals had never been involved in any civil process. The facts upon which those charges rested stemmed from events that happened in the early morning hours of October the 17th, 2016. So we had that trial and we were successful. There were three acquittals and the other two individuals had their charges withdrawn at separate stages of the proceedings. So it was a success, and for them now their process, an encounter with the legal system, has ended.
Why does this mean so much to you?
When I began to see what was happening, and the first thing that really drew me into what was happening was the detention of Ms. Beatrice Hunter. I think that really, really drew a big circle around what was going on. I saw a very sharp outpouring of confusion and hurt amongst the community, particularly in social media, about what was happening.
Did reconciliation play into your defense?
Well, in this particular case, the one that just happened in Labrador that is concluded, no. What actually happened in that particular case was what I would describe as a very pure criminal defense trial, wherein we challenged the Crown's ability to prove the essential elements, and they failed. In fact, they never even managed to get to the point where they could prove identification, which is the fundamental building block on which everything else is based. So we defeated the case in a traditional, pure criminal defense sense.
And so does that mean now that the people that were facing criminal charges as a result of this injunction are now free to go?
Yes. Those people's matters have concluded. They have either been acquitted or had their matters withdrawn. And as I say, there were two different withdrawals at two different times for two different reasons. But yes, that those five people are free and their matters are concluded. Yes.
Now, are the civil matters still before the courts?
Yes, the civil case is not completely concluded. We are currently headed towards the sentencing stage of that case, which has not. We're virtually clear on when it's going to be scheduled, but I'm still trying to resolve one thing logistically. I have to do it today.
So. Now, how could this entire situation have been avoided, do you think?
Oh, that's a really big question. The first thing I'd say is that I'll speak generally as opposed to about what's happening here in the province. It's been very common, and it seems increasingly so, over the last number of years for generally large commercial concerns to utilize injunctive relief, which is a very, very old legal and, in fact, equitable remedy, to facilitate, frankly, the removal of resistance to the utilization of land in a particular way. It's a very common thing. It's been happening. And it's a very old remedy. I want to stress that. This goes back centuries. It evolved in a context which is not really where we are now. And it certainly didn't evolve in a context where it would be applied in a country featuring a complex and fraught history of indigenous settler relations and, you know, constitutionally recognized indigenous rights and so forth. That's not the environment that it came from. So we look at the very common practice, frankly, of major economic concerns, corporations and so forth, seeking injunctive relief in these scenarios.
A relatively minor ruling, but, I mean, what was at stake for them, do you think, if they had lost?
I mean, I won't speculate on what the outcome could have been, other than to say I do not believe it was a particularly severe offense to be accused of. Reasonably confident, even in a worst-case scenario, we would have got to a place where there wouldn't have been permanent criminal records and so forth. But I think what's more at stake for them is they would have a compounded sense of powerlessness and a compounded sense of being ineffectual and not heard and not being able to protect themselves. From my observations, that this is all about the core of how these folks see themselves as sitting in this country and being connected to the country and what's going on. So therefore, it has importance for them, which is far beyond what one would normally see in an average criminal case. I think it goes to the core of their identity and their sense of relationship and empowerment or lack thereof with the state. And that's it.
And for you, I mean, just following this case and being their defense for the last number of years, is there anything that you've learned as a lawyer throughout this process?
I was aware of the issues in play in cases like this in an abstract intellectual sense, and I was also aware of the issues in play in cases like this from previous experience I had working for Indigenous people. And I'll stress that not everybody in this group is Indigenous, but many are. It's one thing to be aware and develop that knowledge in certain contexts. It's another thing to also be aware of things academically, but to actually experience it up front in this very socio-political sort of conflict. I've said, I mean, it's one of the more emotional cases I've ever done. and to understand why people should appreciate that those folks whom you see doing these things are actually incredibly diverse humans who are coming through this and to this experience with a very dizzying array of experiences of their own, and it's not simple. There's no one person who's doing this or one mentality. There's lots, and they're all coming together.